Hello and welcome to All About Symbian Insight number 40 with me, Rafe Blanford.
And Steve Litchfield.
And it's no Ewan this week as he's jetting off to America as we speak to go to Blog World Expo, and I'm sure he'll be reporting back some of his mobile travails from the States. I know he's got a roaming SIM card with data on it, so we'll probably be hearing more about that in subsequent insights. But moving on to the news this week, first up is something about the version V30 firmware on the N82. Now, Steve, I know you've got some news about this and talking a little bit about how we handle this stuff on All About Symbian.
Yeah, it's quite frustrating, really, that the way firmware updates are rolled out between different countries and different dates, and you can understand why Nokia do that. There are slight software tweaks to handle different languages and different variants. In this particular case, this is interesting because they released the V30 firmware for the N82 into the Euro 1 product code on its own, and then I think immediately some people had problems. So what I'm guessing has happened is that Nokia have now gone back to the drawing board and are fixing whatever the bug or the problem was before doing a wider release. But people, in case they're wondering why we haven't mentioned it at all, this is that I take a rather perhaps UK-centric view, but hopefully understandable, that if it's not out for the UK product codes, then it's probably not out for in many other places either. In this case, there is only the one code it's valid for. So as soon as it's out for the UK, we will post on the site. We haven't forgotten about it, and I haven't any to plugged into a PC, and I'm refreshing NSU a couple of times a day. So it's coming, and we shall report back.
Indeed, I think the thing to say here is we try not to report on things we haven't actually seen or tried out ourselves, on the obvious basis that that's the way to be most accurate. And the firmware certainly can be frustrating in that sense. And actually, I think Nokia could maybe learn a lesson if they made it clearer which firmwares are available for which versions. But hopefully that's something we'll see in the future.
Yeah, just to also mention that we're also not ever reporting on things like changing your product code with PC utilities and using the Phoenix BIOS flasher to flash your own custom firmware, all that sort of things. It may be technically interesting, and Rafe and I secretly are fascinated by all the things that go on and all the things you can do, and yes, we know how to do them, but there's absolutely no point in Joe Average, the man in the street who happens upon All About Symbian on Google, for example, saying, oh, here's a how-to on how to reflash my firmware. And of course he gets into complete pickle, bricks his phone, and there's tears all round. So all that side of things we'll leave to some other sites, which we shan't mention. All About Symbian, we want to stay giving you accurate and reliable advice that's not going to break your phone.
Well, Steve's taking a nice diplomatic tone, yeah, but you're absolutely right. You know, we take the view that although these things are possible, you have to keep a realistic view on what's legal and that sort of thing. And Steve, I'm now going to have to bleep out all the naughty words you mentioned in the podcast. So moving on, I think what I'll talk about next is I recently got invited up to Symbian's offices in Southwark in London to have a sort of preview of some of the things that are going on at the smartphone show, and we'll talk about some of the things that will be happening there, and also just have a general catch up with them. You know, Symbian always have the difficulty of they're producing an OS which is actually quite disconnected from the products in many cases, because obviously it's their licensees producing the products. So they have the problem that they produced a new piece of technology that's going into the OS, and they then have to downwrite in some way that's understandable to the wider public. And something we've mentioned in the past in the podcast is symmetric multiprocessing, and this is the idea of your Symbian phone running on a processor with multiple cores. So this is something that they talked a little bit about, and I'm sure we'll be hearing more about at the smartphone show. And for all these demos, you're actually going to be able to see them at the smartphone show that's running October 21st and 22nd, I believe. So in this particular instance, why would you want multiple cores in your phone? And the answer to this is really, it's about power management, but it's also about speed. With multiple cores, you can have different threads, and that's the if you like, in the simplest, an application runs a thread in the processor, but a processor can only run one thread at a time. And so with multiple cores, you have the possibility of running multiple threads. Now, it is more complicated than that, but I'm trying to keep the explanation as simple as I can so I can still understand what I'm saying and I'm not waffling on about something, which I can see Steve tutting
as
in the background. Yeah, absolutely. So think of this as a way that when you're using your phone, If you're making a phone call or browsing the web at the same time, that's actually taking two threads. If you've got multiple cores, you can do those simultaneously and there won't be any lag. So that's the advantage of having multiple cores. But it's also has implications for things like power management. Now, you can power up, i.e. provide power to one of the cores at a time. So if you're doing relatively little on your phone, you may only have one core going, i.e. to sort of run the basic OS, if you like. But if you start multitasking, you then sort of power up the other cores, or if you're doing something that's particular process intensive, for example, playing back a video, then you can use multiple cores. So think for an instance, with playing back a video, you're decoding the MP4, and that happens on one core, and then you're writing to the screen, the actual sort of graphical bit of it, on another core. And it basically means there's better performance and better use of power. Now, Symbian demoed this at the thing, as I say, the other day. So actually seeing a phone like this running on multiple cores is a very impressive achievement, because it's technically quite a complex thing. And there's all sorts of discussion around how Windows Mobile and Linux do it, and do they do it properly. One of the interesting things from a technical point of view that they do is they actually replace the EAK2 microkernel in Symbian with a kernel that supports symmetric multiprocessing. And if you've written your program in the right way, basically asynchronously, and what that means is rather than doing things serially one at a time, but rather allowing things to happen in parallel in an application, your application can, at least in theory, automatically be made to take advantage of the multiple cores. And that's a trick that's actually quite difficult to do on the operating system level. So all that's of interest to developers, but what should consumers care about on this? Basically, it means that phones will run faster, especially in the complex applications, and they'll use less power, so your battery life will last longer. So that's why you care about SMP. So any questions on that, Steve?
Well, I guess there's one obvious question as to when all this is going to happen. When will we first see the first devices coming out with this under the hood?
Okay, so the first mobile processor to support SMP is an ARM processor. It's the, make sure I get this right, the A9 Cortex architecture. And we'll probably be seeing the first phones taking advantage of that next year. Probably in the second half of the year, and so I would say sort of this time next year it's time to start looking out for it. And they're still putting the finishing touches to the stuff in the OS, so yes, I would say sort of tail end of 2009, and subsequently to that we'll be seeing an awful lot of this sort of thing, particularly in the higher end devices.
Yeah, it's worth mentioning that, of course, we've talked about Symbian for years as being multitasking, and it is. Symbian, as following on from the old Scion, it's a fully multitasking operating system where things happen at the same time, but not really at the same time. They're actually being shuffled under the hood, so all be taking slices of the processor's time. What we're talking about here is true hardware multitasking, if I've understood that right, Rafe.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. There is a distinction there. What you perceive as multitasking is actually things happening serially in a single processor. What's happening with SMP is effectively true multitasking, because you've got multiple chips running at the same time, and therefore multiple threads or actions taking place. Because if you think about it, essentially a CPU is a calculator performing calculations. It's obviously more complex than that, but it can only ever perform one calculation at a time. In order to do multiple calculations at a time, you need a multiple cores. And as you say, it's hardware multitasking. And it's pretty obviously goes without saying that has quite considerable performance implications. It's not quite a case of, if you add in two cores, it goes twice as fast and so on, because there is a performance overhead for splitting things fairly obviously. If you have a thing that says, right, let's split it between the two cores, that has an overhead. But relatively speaking, you can maybe look at about, a 90% performance premium by adding in a second core, for example.
Yeah, it's worth also just mentioning, you mentioned Windows Mobile briefly, if I can try and summarise where the other platforms and the Symbian's competitors stand on all this. I think Symbian certainly, I would say, is at least 2 years ahead of most of the field. Obviously, old things like Palm OS were not multitasking in any way whatsoever. Apple's iPhone, I believe, does multitask its own built-in applications, but you can't multitask anything third-party, and that's all in software. Google's Android, I'm presuming, is also software multitasking, but not hardware. So Symbian is the only OS company that's actually supporting multiple processors, Rafe, is that right?
Yes, that's right. I mean, I'm sure it's in the roadmap for the others, but Symbian is significantly ahead. When people talk about the relative virtues of the operating systems, Symbian is technically quite considerably more advanced in some of these fields, and it's a similar thing to the single chip processors that we've talked about in the past. And you know, that's pretty standard now in Symbian phones. You know, devices like the N79, the numbered S60 devices from Nokia, and some of the other ones are all single chip devices, and there's been very, very few of those on other platforms. You know, the iPhone is a dual processor. It has both a sort of application processor and a phone processor. So this is kind of the next stage on from that, if you like. And yes, Symbian is quite considerably ahead. And I mean, the interesting thing about this symmetric multiprocessing is obviously we've got dual cores and things like that on the PC, but they're, you know, not all implementations of an operating system using multiple cores are necessarily equal. So it'd probably be fair to say that the Linux implementations of multiple cores are more technically advanced than Windows, say, but neither of them are necessarily true. Take full advantage of multiple cores, because a lot of the stuff in them is still done serially, and in computing some things you can't avoid doing serially. Typically I/O operations have to be done serially, so you know, the actual advantage you get out of it isn't the same between OSs, and what Symbian has done is doing it at a very low level in the kernel, so effectively the operating system above it is kind of agnostic as to whether it's running on a single chip or multiple multiple cores. So this kind of thing is very geeky, but as I say, the interest to consumers here is more power in your phones without having a significant impact on power. Indeed, it's better power wise and you'll have an even more powerful computer in your pocket.
Okay, thanks Rafe. Let's move on, before we do get a tiny bit too geeky, just to lighten the load pressure slightly. The Nokia N79, which you had a play with a couple of weeks ago, this is the prototype N79. I still don't think there are any production N79s out there. I thought I wasn't going to like it. I borrowed it from Nokia this week, and I was quite impressed, just as you were. You said that the N79 had the, I quote, the X factor. I think you're absolutely right. All these technologies that Nokia's been bringing in from the N93, N95, N82 onwards, things like accelerometers and GPS and 5-megapixel cameras. This one's now got dual LED for video lighting, and that works quite well as well. This one handset, the M79, wearing 97 grams and looking pretty stylish, I think everyone would have to agree, has everything you want to know. Everything you'd ever liked in a Nokia N series smartphone, all in the one device. Yeah, a few people are going to say it hasn't got Xenon flash and it's a tiny bit on the dinky side, but I think for a mass market mid-tier top-end phone that's not presumably not going to be too expensive, to have everything in feature pack 2, fully mature software, fully mature hardware, all in the one device, I think that things like the N78, the N80, the N73, they're all leading up to this one device, the N79, and for its market, I think it's going to do tremendously well. I think it'll be a flagship in the mid-tier for the next 12 months or so.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. You know, in boxing they talk about the performance pound to pound to compare between classes, and I really feel that the N79 punches above its weight, just because it's the overall package. You know, it's got a hint of style with the Express on covers, but certainly doesn't you know, lack anything in the specification department. And sure, new stuff is going to come along, and we'll have next generation processors next year and new technology coming in with things like NFC, but for its market position, I mean, it's an amazing device, what's packed into it. I think the design, you know, it looks much better, I think, in person than it does in the photos. It just has a nice feel about it. And yeah, you know, it had the usual issues with, you know, prototypes. But, you know, seeing how that taken forward, I think it's possibably even more promising than the N85. I mean, I think the N85 would still be close to my personal choice, but that said, you know it's not necessarily about what I think, it's the general market. And it's just the little touches, things like, you know, the sliding lens cover, the fact that the keypad's, you know, despite being very small, is quite usable, as you say, Steve, you know, feature pack 2 software, so all the, you know, integrated Ovi services are there, the Nokia maps, and it works fine, Nokia music will work fine, you know, fast USB, so it really is sort of I think the end point of the current generation of hardware. and it is reflected in the fact it's, you know, well put together, well rounded, and I think it provides some very serious competition to everybody else out there. And I don't really see a device that matches it in the complete picture.
Yeah, there's the you mentioned the fast USB there, and in addition to the usual sort of top end Wi-Fi, GPS specs, there's a, as you say, there's the accelerometer, there's an FM transmitter, there's the Navi wheels, there's all the little touches and innovations that've been brought into the N series over the last 2 years. Every single touch from all those previous devices are now all in the one device, and it's small, and it looks like a phone, and it's not going to be too expensive. So I just can't see this going anywhere but being a winner.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it with the N73 and the way that really took off. And still, you know, when you're walking about, it's that device and the N95 that you see in most people's hands, certainly in the UK. I think the same is true elsewhere. I've been, perhaps with some of the E-series starting to have a showing now. And I'm pretty confident that it's going to sort of inherit the mantle of the N73, if you will, if not even more so. And I think the difference is with the N79, I think some of the extra bits, you know, like the music, maps, what have you, really will be used, whereas the N73 was principally the camera that attracted people. I think you know, the N79, you know, for example, if you added in something like comes with music or, you know, a 6-month navigation trial on the maps, you know, there's still gaps in that software, but it's good enough that I think a lot of people will be attracted to it and actually use that sort of stuff. There is still a sort of how do you tip people into using those services in the mass market, and that's open to debate, of course, but I do feel this is one of the first handsets that really gets that complete picture right. For, you know, we talk about the normal mobile user a lot, but for people who pick up this and, what's this maps icon, what's this music icon, and I really think they might actually take advantage of it rather than having to deliberately make a conscious decision to do so. It's as we often talk about, when does technology go mass market? And it's sort of the idea that once it becomes invisible, it's just there, people start using it. And I don't think it's necessarily quite there, but it's getting very, very much closer in, say, the N79 than it was in the N95, you know, for mass market usage anyway.
Yeah. Let's move on from the N79, which I'm sure we'll be getting a production device of that in the next month or so, and we'll come back to it then. Talking of production devices, apparently a production N96, which a lot of people have been waiting for, despite the fact it's been a long time since it's announced, one of those will be arriving fairly soon. Of course, you know, we already have the i8510, the Samsung Innovate, in other markets, hardware, and that is production hardware. Both devices, though, that people have been asking over and over again, certainly by email, when are we going to review the two head-to-head? And the short-term answer is we're not going to do a head-to-head until they're both ready for a head-to-head. The N96, although it's a lot more mature than the Samsung offering, I suspect is still going to need at least one firmware update after launch before it's really fully rounded and ready for a review head-to-head. The Samsung i8510, I would say, needs probably another two firmware updates. And I know
the first one's happened, and we're just waiting on the second one now, I think.
Okay, and we're also waiting for their over-the-air firmware update server. So, my point about delaying on this head-to-head is I don't want to do either device down. I'm not going to be a fanboy about either of them and say this is the ultimate phone, but I want to give them both a fair chance. It's not fair. Would be fair to pitch next week, for example, the Nokia N96 against the i8510 head-to-head as it is then, even with this extra firmware tweak we've seen. I think the Samsung device, they are newer to S16, newer to this whole field. I think it's fair to give them an extra couple of weeks, if not a month or so, before doing a really definitive head-to-head and pitching the two contenders as the best they can be.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And although we can bear in mind they are both effectively now on the market, the N96 will be out in the next 2 weeks or so in the UK and around the world subsequently to that at sort of beginning of October. You know, most people are going to be buying these devices a little bit after that. And if you're an early adopter, you know, you're probably pretty aware of some of the issues around software updates. I don't know. My opinion at the moment is really that the i8510 is the superior handset because of its technical capabilities, but the N96 is perhaps more rounded in the software package because of the sort of suite of services that it comes with. And still, you know, people say, you know, can you really compare them head-to-head? Yes, you can, because obviously they're the two most expensive S60 devices that you can buy. Although I would also point out they are slightly differently positioned. You know, the i8510 is definitely a multimedia all-rounder, whereas the N96 definitely has more of an accent on kind of the video and the TV aspects of multimedia, although it's equally capable elsewhere. I think that'll probably be borne out when we do start doing the heads-to-heads. Watch this space. We are aware that they're very popular handsets, and we'll be doing our best to make sure they get complete coverage.
Yeah, as you, people will already know, one of my specialties is the photographic side of things. And, of course, the i8510 does have the headline feature of this 8-megapixel camera, which, as we've already seen from some of the test photos, is actually pretty good. It's also got this focus, initial focus and video recording, which works really, really well. If readers are listening to this now, they can also go on the web onto my smartphone show website, where Show 65 includes quite a few sequences shot of close-up of device screens shot on the ID510 at around about 8 or 9 centimeters away. So it's focusing that close in macro mode, shooting at VGA 30 frames a second. Now, I'm a geeky. Not many people need to shoot video that 10 centimeters away, but it just shows what the ID510 can do. Yeah. In both still mode and video mode, and I think that's the headline feature. I'm guessing that Nokia are going to produce an 8-megapixel N-series device at some point, and I guess that you could argue that might be the closer head-to-head, but we're still certainly going to pitch these two devices together at some point.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. Now Steve has finished his plug for the smartphone show. just underline, the i8510 is ahead in the camera department. To my mind, there is really no question about that. And there are some tweaks that they can do with the video codecs and things like that. But for most people, you'll get better camera performance out of the i8510. And certainly the people I've shown it to have been very, really impressed with the device. And I've seen a lot of people have, been picking them up and have been pretty satisfied with it. And I do think Samsung, brings some welcome competition. As Steve said, I don't think we'll have too long to wait for a Nokia 8-megapixel device in the N-series range. If you want my best on it, I would sort of be casting your eyes in the direction of February 2009 and maybe looking down towards Barcelona and seeing what gets announced then.
Okay, that's your date for your diary, and also to watch the site. And one final point on this podcast, I just wanted to talk briefly about some of the games world, in terms that we've got the Nokia N-Gage world, of course, on S60 handsets, and there's a lot of the current flagships in the N-series range currently run the N-Gage clients. You can play this range. I think it's about 15 or so games now have been released. And also, Rafe and I both have iPod Touches or stroke iPhones, and looking at the game scene on iPhone, which has been particularly interesting because of how good it is, and certainly as someone who's not a fanboy in the Symbian world, but certainly someone who's very experienced, it's been quite a revelation seeing the speed at which third-party apps and games in particular have been coming on in the iPhone world. Wishing to be a Mac fanboy, just to give you an example of some of the applications. There's a full flight simulator. That's obviously a geeky first early adopter thing you want to run on a computer. Back in the early days of home computers, if it could run a flight simulator, then it was a proper computer. And there's a game called X-Plane, where you can fly a variety of aircraft, very much like Microsoft Flight Simulator on the PC, and fly them around real rendered landscapes with impeccable physics, down to flaps and throttles and turn rates, really, really accurate, and it runs at a staggering frame rate. And this is all on a little handheld device on your phone, if you like. There's nothing equivalent to that in the N-Gage world. I think that where I see it coming, the N-Gage is specializing in sort of puzzles and software-rendered sort of semi-action games without really going down the full 3D immersive effect, whereas the iPhone has a bit twice the processor power and a bit more oomph under the hood, and so you get more fully featured rendering. There's the Virtual Pool, one of my favorite games in S60, has just come out on the iPhone and iPod Touch. And again, this is a larger screen, there's a smoother frame rate, and I think that's the iPhone's advantage. The reason we're seeing so many good games coming out for the iPhone are because of the extra screen real estate. There is a limit to what you can see and what you can render in something that's only 2.6 inches or 2.8 inches in diagonal. Rafe, have you any opinions on this?
Yeah, I mean, I've been playing a few of the iPod Touch games, and I have to say, I haven't really been that impressed. There's undoubtedly some of the games, quite technically impressive from the graphics point of view, but none of them have really blown me away in terms of gameplay. Now, actually, I could say that the same about Engage. There are relatively few games on there that really stand out for me, and I want to come back and play over and over again. But Steve is right in terms of the technical stuff. You know, I think the big screen in particular makes a difference for certain types of games. And it's been interesting to see all this activity in the App Store. There is all, you know, just as there is on S60, there's an awful lot of craft about as well. You know, gaming's been particularly strong, but outside of that, some of the sort of traditional areas in the App Store are perhaps weaker. But yes, you know, I've tried some of the games that Steve has been talking about, and there's some golf games on there as well. But as I say, you know, I think it does make the best of its you know, capabilities in terms of being a gaming platform. But you know, Steve Jobs at the recent Apple announcement talked about taking on Nintendo, and I just don't really think it's realistic, to be honest. It's perfectly adequate and plays some pretty decent games, but I wouldn't see it standing out perhaps as much as some people do.
Yeah, that's all fair comment. I would say, agree with you on the gameplay angle. I think the N-Gage games, although there are some duffers in the current N-Gage lineup, there are some games which have genuinely addictive gameplay as well. Things like Reset Generation stand out, of course. Whereas the iPhone games are almost like technical demos in one sense. The X-Plane being a good example. You really aren't going to, unless you're a flight sim geek, you're not going to sit there for 2 hours piloting a Cessna around Middle America. But the fact that you can do it at all is jaw-dropping in itself. So there's a long way to go in terms of both platforms, though.
Oh, absolutely. And I think describing it as a technical demo is a great way to do it. You know, it's almost like the demo scene that you saw sort of earlier in computing, where there's an awful lot of impressive stuff going on. But it's interesting that some of the sort of big labels coming out, you know, with games, the like of EA Sports, and I think Spore has recently come out as an example of that. There are some good games, and they're graphically very rich, but I don't really think they stand out in the same way that, you know, some of the big hits on the Nintendo DS do, for example, or even the PlayStation Portable. So, you know, it's almost the buzz around the iPhone and the iPhone platform makes people compare it with other things, and I just honestly don't think it's realistic, you know. I think for platforms like this, in the longer term, it's going to be the casual games that really take off. And I've yet to be really convinced by that. But of course, as you say, it is early days. And as we know only too well, Engage has its own set of problems. And I think actually in some ways it's the other way round for Engage. You know, some of the more technically impressive stuff is missing, you know, although we do have exceptions, you know, the cross-platform playing between PC and mobile with Reset Generation. I think Star Wars is actually quite interesting as a standout game for what you can do with software rendered graphics. You know, people talk a lot about how Engage has missed an opportunity with the 3D graphics. I'm not really convinced that that's true, because when you're playing on a mobile device, you know, gameplay I think is far more important. But of course, it does depend on the type of gamer. And I think the whole way Nokia have gone about the Engage platform in terms of, you know, being able to easily download games, be part of the community, is very smart. It just hasn't really been taken advantage of yet, both in some of the games, and it just hasn't really grown enough. So it'll be interesting to watch this battle longer term and see what the market decides, basically.
Yeah, the numbers are quite low, actually. If I'm honest, if I look at the N-Gage portfolio and, for example, the Windows Mobile Games portfolio and the iPhone portfolio, I would probably say there's only two or three on each platform which are really addictive and gloriously done. There is, as you say, an awful lot of filler in each of these ideas. Games which are almost there, but it's not addictive enough, or it's too easy, or it's too difficult, or the graphics are rubbish. To get a really good game that works on every level in terms of resolution, quality, addictiveness, gameplay, is actually very, very hard, which is why there are comparatively few success stories.
And perhaps we're being unfair, because, you know, it's like that on every platform. You know, the number of bad games that you get on the PlayStation Portable or the DS or any other gaming platform, you know, for all of those, you probably only get five or six standout games per generation of gaming device. And, you know, it's unrealistic to expect mobile to be any different to that, however much we might wish it. Although I do feel it could be different with some of the casual gaming, and something like the Xbox Arcade is, I think, a good example of how you can do that properly. And for all the criticisms about Engage, I think I would recognise the fact that it provides one of the best experiences in terms of getting hold of new games and installing them easily. It just needs to build up its portfolio a little bit and build up its user numbers to be able to take advantage of that completely.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are some, of course, there's two or three very nice Engage games that are still on the way. If you go onto the Engage website and click on their showroom, there are always two or three really tasty titles that are coming soon.
Yeah, but you should only ever do that after visiting All About Engage and visiting the game section, which is more complete, more comprehensive, and has more information. So just a quick plug for All About Engage there.
Which is not affiliated to us in any way. Of course it is. Yes. we love All About Engage. And there we are. I think we've run out of time, Rafe. We're over at the half an hour point.
Yeah, we've gassed on as usual, mainly my fault because I've been waffling away. But thanks everybody for listening, and thanks Steve for chatting with me. It's always a pleasure.
All right, till next week. Bye.